This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Welcome to Dishy Mix. I'm your host, Susan Bratton. And on today's show, you're going to get to meet Kurt Abrahamson. He's the CEO, and this is a fairly new role for him, at socialmedia.com. What a great URL. Kurt came from Google, but I've known him for a long time, probably, I'd say 94, 95, because he's one of the original Jupiter Communications crowd. Oh, some of my favorite people. We'll talk about him on the show, I'm sure. So we're going to have another show about social media and about Kurt. Let's get him on the show and welcome him. Welcome, Kurt.
Hey, Susan. How you doing?
I'm great, dear. I know we were just, before we started the show, we were talking about the fact that you and I kind of saw each other. Well, we're both really tall. You and I saw each other from across the room at the ad tech chairman's reception. And I was saying that you were kind of on your way out, and I couldn't even get over to you because I had on these towering high heels, and the floorboards were, they had these huge cracks and gouges in them. And I didn't even drink a glass of wine while I was there. I thought to myself, I'm going down in this place if I don't be careful. So we never really got to connect there, but we knew we were going to have this time together to do the show, which is awesome.
Yes, thank you very much.
It's my pleasure. You know, before we get into socialmedia.com and what you're doing there, which is fascinating to me, and I can't wait to talk about it, I did want to talk a little bit about your time at Google. You ran sales ops for first global and then North America. But one of the things that you did there was you came up with the idea to do the Google's Zeitgeist events. And I was always jealous that I never got an invitation to that, but I wasn't spending big bucks on Google, so I couldn't have. Tell me some of your favorite moments from some of the Zeitgeist events.
Well, you know, I put together Zeitgeist with my friend Patrick Keene, who I worked with at Jupiter and at Google.
I know Pat.
And Patrick and I came up with the idea, and I have to say it was definitely the most rewarding experience I had at Google. I mean, we had the support of Eric Schmidt to do this event, and we wanted to do it in a very different way and not just make it about Google and its products, but to make it about, you know, the interactive and the technology world that we all lived in. So we had, you know, wild carte blanche to bring in really whoever we thought was interesting. We had an amazing presentation from David Remnick, where the editor of The New Yorker, where he talked about his view of the Bush administration and what they had done with the Iraq War. Just a fascinating presentation. We had John Legend perform at the event during the actual show and then talk about some of his charitable endeavors. We had Malcolm Gladwell. We had Bill Clinton, Al Gore, David Cameron, who I believe is going to be elected Prime Minister of England today. So it was just a great chance to sort of pick the people we thought were the most fascinating in the world and give them a forum to speak at the campus. And it was really just an incredibly rewarding experience.
Based on all of the people who spoke at all of the Zeitgeists over the years, was there any moment that you particularly remember that had a more of a profound effect on you, something that was maybe a little more remarkable than you were expecting or gave you some insight that you hadn't ever had before?
You know, there were a number of times where that happened. I mean, I'm trying to think specifically, you know, Al Gore gave a talk pretty much around the time his movie came out, and then he won the Nobel Prize the next day. So that was sort of a remarkable thing to be part of. We had a woman, you know, and her name slips my mind maybe wasn't completely as memorable, but who directed that movie Born into Brothels, who talked about her experience filming that movie in the slums in India. And she just gave very impassioned talk about the role of movie making and the positive impact it can have in the world. I'd have to say that with each show, there were five or six moments that were just like, wow, I can't believe we're having the opportunity to do this in this fashion. The David Remnick one, like I mentioned, he just came out with a point to make, and he started slowly, and then he just really wound it all the way around to making a very, very specific, you know, indictment in terms of what he thought the Bush administration was doing in terms of trying to silence the press in Iraq. So the best thing about the event was these moments happened over and over again, and I definitely take a certain amount of pride about having been involved in that.
Yeah, it's almost my experience going to the TED conferences where each moment is another, it's like a never-ending wave of goodness, so much so that it all becomes a blur, but it leaves you with this really expansive, creative, positive feeling that there's, you know, hope for humanity.
Yeah, absolutely. And we really, you know, sometimes it got a little, I don't know, I mean, we had some criticism that it was, you know, it was too, you know, liberal in its intent and all that. Although we had, you know, Colin Powell speak, and we tried to balance it. And we tried to also, we had fabulous business speakers. John Chambers talked about his vision of management. We had Michael Dell give a great talk. So we really tried to balance it off and just have as many different perspectives as we could possibly manage.
So I want to talk about Jupiter Communications. That was when you and I first met.
Yep,
you were
absolutely.
Part of that original Jupiter crew. And to this day, I still adore so many of your peers who were there at the time that you were forming that organization. I mean, a week and a half ago, I had so much fun at dinner with Peter Stork. I mean, we had side splitting laughs, mostly him laughing at me because I'm like this crazy aberration in his life, you know, where he just can't believe the stuff that comes out of my mouth when we're drinking wine at dinner. But it's such a great group of people. Peter, Jean DeRose, Marissa Gluck, you know, Kitty Colding's now over there at House Party with Jean. I know you're on their board. How did it happen that that crew of people came together? What, you guys were a special group of people, and you're still close.
That's really nice of you to put it that way. I mean, Jean and Peter and I grew up together. So
is that right? Was that what it was? You guys were all from this. There was some level of depth and connection that you had. It was growing up together, huh?
Yeah, well, and House Party, the company that Kitty's running, is in Irvington, New York,
yeah,
which is where we all grew up.
You all grew up in Irvington. Interesting.
Yeah, I was the best man in Pete's wedding, and we've known each other for a while. You know, it's amazing because, you know, that group even is, you know,
Evan more, Neufeld.
Yeah, remarkable to me even now because, you know, Dennis Crawley, who was a research associate, is the CEO of Foursquare, and Evan Cohen works there with him, and Dave DeRose, who's Gene's brother, runs a small research company. He's the CEO there, and Patrick Keane, of course, is the CEO of Associated Content. So we've had quite a successful group, too, as well as very high-quality people. And I don't know. I mean, Gene and I, you know, we got a good group that started there, and they bring good people, bring in good people. That's definitely the, you know, what I learned at Google as well. So it was a great time. And, you know, we rode the market all the way up. And then when things got tough, we rode it all the way back down.
As did we all.
As we all did. And it was a great experience. I count those people as some of my closest friends still at this point. So it was a great experience.
Just love them all. Absolutely love them all. If you guys go off on some adventure, take me with you.
Okay.
I need to be an honorary member of the original Jupiter crowd. You know, I feel like I am.
That would be fun.
So people powered advertising. Speaking of great people, you're now at socialmedia.com. You've come in as CEO and you're doing some pretty unique and interesting things. I remember the first time I ever thought about this idea of dynamically generated, distributed, unique stuff was Jim Nail from Forrester, right? Jupiter's kind of arch rival in a way during that time. Jim coined this term distributed content or something, this distributed dynamic content. And mm-hmm. and then the next time I got a real sense of the possibilities of it, and that was probably 96. The next time I got a real sense of it was maybe 3 or 4 or 5 years ago when Brett Hurt started Bizarre Voice, and he was showing me how within ads, he was integrating reviews and ratings by site users on websites for e-commerce companies, dynamically inserting user reviews, good and bad. You know, the whole idea being real is better than fake. A bad review is more plausible than anything. And I thought, oh yeah, this is the next step in this. And now at socialmedia.com, you're using the social graph and friends within ads, making these kind of interactive, dynamic social ads. That's my perception of it. And I feel like that's like the next big chunk of where this is all going. You will explain this more beautifully than I. So articulate what you're doing there.
You know, you did a pretty good job. That was well done. I think that I'm very excited about what social media is trying to do, and even more so now than when I started 4 months ago, which is a good thing. And I think that when you look at, so this is the basic premise from my point of view, when you look at all the time that people are spending in doing social activities online and all the time they're spending on social media sites, it's inevitable that, in my mind, it's inevitable, just like with content and search, that all of that activity is going to find its way into advertising. And there are lots of companies who are looking at that. Obviously, Facebook has been successful. But we're really one of the only companies that is looking at how that is actually going to impact the content and messages in advertising itself. So we're not trying to create campaigns for brands to launch Facebook pages, and we're not listening, you know, doing the sort of listening that some of these companies are doing. We're really focused on the idea that the messages and the statements in advertising themselves will become more social over time.
You're focused on display ads, integrating social content into display ads, as I think, by looking at your website.
Absolutely. And the way we do that is we use data sources that are available on the web, whether it's tweets from Twitter or whether it's comments on Facebook fan pages or reviews from Yelp or check-ins from Foursquare. What we try to do is what we do is pull in data from different web API sources and combine them in ad units to create interesting messages. And then we also have the ability to tailor those messages to the individual. So on a very simple level, if I'm a male in New York, I'm looking at advertisements from Miller, for instance, or Budweiser, I would see different tweets or different Facebook comments in New York than someone in San Francisco would see. And the more data we have, the more we can target that message. So we're very excited about it. I mean, I think it's getting brands and agencies excited about it too is the challenge, you know, that we're addressing right now. But I think overall, I feel very comfortable about what we're trying to get done.
Well, what you're doing is absolutely right on. It is absolutely the way it has to go. And the brands that embrace it early are going to win. They need to get out of general display and rich media, and they need to immediately get into social. The big scare, I'm sure, is that 50% of the comments about a particular brand are going to be, you know, somewhere in there, whatever the percentage is, are going to be negative. So what do you do to get over the fact that if a brand creates a container of display ads that you then pull content in from, whether it's reviews or comments or check-ins or tweets or whatever the flavor du jour is, and some of that's bad, what does a brand do? Oh, some of it's prurient. Could you have filters? When does it become inauthentic? What do you do about that?
We actually can filter it based on keywords, just like, you know, which is fairly common these days. We actually can review them through our account teams to make sure that the messages are appropriate.
Take out the naughty bits for sure.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. What we're seeing right now is exactly what you'd expect, Susan, which is that industries that tend to be more conservative and more brand-focused, such on the CPG side, are still looking for a lot of control in terms of what they, in terms of statements that are made about their brands. Industries such as entertainment and movies, you can see now how they're getting more comfortable with the fact that the social commentary about their brand is a dialogue and it's along a continuum. And so you will see movie studios perhaps not going for "this movie sucks," but they going for "overall I liked the movie, but I thought, you know, Bruce Willis sucked." And so you're seeing, just as you see in, you know, advertising overall, a continuum in terms of which industries are most comfortable with social comments and which industries are not. And I think, you know, this is a very early stage on this stuff. You know, over the next 3, 5, 7 years, you'll see a lot of change. And I think, you know, social involvement and social commentary is here to stay. And what people say, what real people say about your brand, ultimately has more resonance with friends and communities than what the brand is trying to say. And I just think that is an inevitable force in terms of the direction of advertising over time.
Inevitable. Completely inevitable. You must do this if you want to be pertinent.
I think, you know, it's interesting to see, you know, because we work with publishers and they get it, and we work with agencies and we work with advertisers, and everyone sort of gets it, but there's still a fair amount of hesitancy to understand how it can work directly for them and what would happen and being more comfortable with losing control.
Yeah, when you get down to the weeds of your own brand, then it's very easy for me to sit here and say it's inevitable.
Exactly.
But if someone's shit-talking dishy mix and that's in my ad, how do I feel about it? I actually feel good. I wish I had the money to do a campaign for my products, because this is the campaign that I would do once I did my PPC.
Right.
You're, from your old Google halls, that's the beast, right?
Yeah, well, one of the things we're trying to figure out, frankly, is how do smaller advertisers take available of the things we're working on? Because obviously, in general, they don't have, Twitter pages or Facebook pages with lots of commentary, and they don't have that kind of distribution. So one of the things I have our product team focused on is really what is the angle here that would work for mid and smaller size advertisers? And we don't have an answer for that yet, but it is obviously something where, you know, that would make sense, because that's where you can really gain scale.
Yeah, you've got to get to the automated. You know the value of automated. You worked at Google.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, we're going to go to a break, and when we come back, one of the things that I'd asked you about were giving me a couple of topics about which you'd enjoy speaking in advance, and one of them was, how will Facebook dominate social advertising? Well, you've given quite a bit away in how you structured that question. So clearly you came from Google, a company that dominated advertising, and now you have an opinion about Facebook. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about some of the other things that are going on with you, how you got arrested. I want to talk about the trek in Nepal that you took. We've got some fun things to talk about. Plus, I'm not done talking about social ads. So we'll go to a break, thank my sponsors, and when we come back, let's get into that. Sound good?
Yep, absolutely.
Awesome. All right, I'm your host, Susan Bratton. We're here with Kurt Abrahamson. He's the CEO of socialmedia.com. They're recreating the next level of social meets display. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. The dream. You're a master interviewer, clear, confident, asking killer questions nobody else ever thought of. Guests swear it's their best interview ever, as keen insights are revealed and your raving fans promote your work for you. The reality? Killer questions? You're even boring yourself. Your voice trembles, your palms sweat, and everyone can hear that bubble in your throat. Panic sets in when you think about asking an expert for an interview. Help is here. All you need is masterful interviews, creating profitable content, a system that turns your audience into raving fans who promote your work for you, and how to come up with those killer questions for riveting, profitable information products. Get it now at masterfulinterviews.com and download the free easy question generator mini course today. Now get $100 off with promo code DISHY at masterfulinterviews.com. We're back. I'm with Kurt Abrahamson. Kurt, before we left, I was kind of chuckling over your sentence. You want me to ask you this. So, Kurt, how will Facebook dominate social advertising?
Well, Facebook is dominating social advertising. And I think, obviously, the success of Facebook is, you know, it's the next Google story. It is nothing short of phenomenal in terms of what they've done in terms of building the brand and executing. And most of the online advertising dollars that are spent in the social space right now are spent on Facebook. And I don't see that significantly changing. They have the social graph data, which they can leverage very effectively. But like with Google, I think, one, they will not own the entire market, and two, there will be you know, companies like, coincidentally, like socialmedia.com, which can offer some alternatives. And what we like to do is, especially when we talk to publishers, is to say that, you know, you want your social advertising to be more than just driving traffic to Facebook fan pages. You know, that may be part of what you're trying to do or willing to do. But, you know, what we like, how we position ourselves to publishers is we can pull in data from the web and we can pull in data from their websites to allow them to create social ad products that work just on their site. And that's what we do with MySpace. That's what we do with IDG and a bunch of other publishers. So Facebook is going to be clearly the dominant player in the market, but we do see a lot of opportunity around what they're able to do.
Well, a couple of things. One, you're building walled garden solutions for other publishers so that they can have the kinds of ads that Facebook naturally has because of their social graph data.
Absolutely.
So I get that you're doing that. You're also, I think, creating multiple campaigns that allow a brand to run a campaign outside of Facebook on multiple publishers' websites, right?
Correct.
So now you're going to publishers and saying, you need to carry our ad units. You've got to go call on the ops people and get them to QA your ads like rich media companies had to do, right?
Exactly.
Okay. So it's a bit of a pain in the ass, but it's basically just a knock them down kind of a thing, which you can accomplish.
It is a bit of a pain in the ass.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope you got a good guy or a good woman doing that for you because it's a thankless job.
It is.
It's a hard one, you know, yeah. But it just takes like sheer will, you know, to stay on that stuff, but it's doable. So you've got that as an executional thing. So these pieces of information are good. The thing that I think advertisers haven't completely become aware of with Facebook is that what you said, and I wanted to pull it out of your statement. When you advertise on Facebook, you're in a walled garden. When you do those ads that have the social graph in them, you have to spend a minimum of $25,000 a month and you have to have a Facebook fan page. And those ads that you see running across Facebook don't link out to a brand. They only link back into the fan page of a brand. And I don't think that everybody completely understands that you've got to have big bucks and it only goes into Facebook. They're literally getting brands to spend tons of money just circulating people around their own site. What do you think about that?
You know, I think it's really fascinating. And I think, of course, the part that has not been completely proven out on the Facebook model is can they monetize at the sort of billions and billions of dollars that will be necessary to really own the market. You know, I've had people say to me that one of the things that Facebook is pitching or they've heard of being pitched is, you know, get rid of your corporate marketing sites. Don't spend all that money on hiring those people and running those sites and doing all of that. Just have a Facebook fan page and drive people to that and think of all the money you can save. And that, to me, is a really, that's an interesting proposition. And I think I can see the appeal of that to certain brands, but that is ceding a lot of power to Facebook. I mean, that is saying that Facebook is going to be, you know, a dominant part of the infrastructure of the internet and not just, you know, a services company. And, you know, people think that's possible, but it's,
not me. I'd
really
never do it. I'd never do it ever. And I'd never recommend anybody cede that level of power to a particular company like that. My God. Especially because there's only a gazinta. There's no gazauta on Facebook, right? I mean, all the data goes in, but you can't get it out.
Right. But you've heard that too, right? I mean, that is sort of what I've heard that being discussed, that's one of the things that that's one of the pitches.
Oh, it's the biggest bitch.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So what do you think about Twitter's 9 points of resonance with their new ads? Because it's really modeled on like page rank and inbound links and that whole, you know, Google algorithm world, right? Don't you think? I mean, when I read it, I was like, they totally took the Google thing and took it to the next level. I like that.
You know, Twitter is another, we're lucky to be living in a time where all these interesting companies are, because I'm not convinced that Twitter wants to make money. I'm not sure Twitter wants to be a dirty ad company. And I think that they are not convinced that they will need the infrastructure to get that done if they commit that way. And I don't think that's the case. I mean, I think that, as you know as well as I do, that if you're going to sell to Madison Avenue and you're going to sell to the big agencies, you have to have the infrastructure that they're used to and demand in terms of servicing them. You know, Google is the most efficient ad organization in the history of the planet, and it still has 1,200 people in North America serving large companies. So I think Twitter needs to decide, are they really going to get in, and because they really are a brand play. They're not really a DR play. And, you know, if they are going to play, then I think they're going to have to be more aggressive than they've been so far.
Well, I actually think Twitter's more of a DR play than Facebook at this point. If Facebook is just a, you know, an internal cluster F, right? I mean, it's just like all you're doing is you're just clicking people through to your, you know, your walled garden page, where at least with Twitter, the ads are being served all over and they can link to anything. It's much more like Google, where it's relevant content clicked on by people who are interested that takes them to an alternative destination outside of Twitter.
Yeah, I agree with that too.
Yeah, so there's much more opportunity for DR. You serve an ad that people like and they click on it and it links to a landing page that has some great content and, oh, by the way, lets you buy something or whatever it might be, and you're making money, or you're giving away a free white paper to get leads or whatever it might be. I mean, there's lots of ways to, you know, Trojan horse your way into upsell funnels with Twitter because it allows you to click out. Mm-hmm. Where with Facebook, what are you going to do? Send them to your wall?
No, that's true. I agree with that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I haven't thought through, like, when they get to the wall, what could you do? There are ways you can get them from your wall to something else, but that's a big hop, you know?
Yeah,
and how do you keep the wall fresh with the thing you want them to click on?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are limits to what Facebook is trying to do. I think that, you know, the fact that their user base is still growing so quickly, you know, is obviously the opportunity that they're looking to leverage. So the interest in spending time on Facebook is not—it's not slowing down. But how they capitalize that to really, you know, I mean, one of the things that was one of the turning points in—and Google is very different from Facebook—but one of the turning points was really when some of these large companies started spending $50 million a year on Google. I don't see how GM spends $50 million a year on Facebook. And if they can't get that kind of spending, ultimately, I think there is a bit of a cap to their growth.
I think so, too. Now, another thing that I want to talk about with you, and then I want to get into the personal side, because you're interesting to me, and I want to make sure I get to that. But I don't even want to talk about what comes next in social advertising. I don't even want to talk about, like, your next innovations and what your, you know, product roadmap is at socialmedia.com. I want to talk about what you're selling right now that I can buy, that you like, that you think is the smartest thing you sell.
I think the smartest thing we sell right now is the ability to pull in comments from either Twitter or Facebook or individual websites into ad units to show how the conversation is evolving for a brand. And I think the best way to think about it is movie releases. That's the one I've been focused on lately, because movies are nothing but social experiences. And one of the things that most determines what movies you're going to see is what your friends or the people you respect tell you about that movie. And so what our ad products allow movie studios to do is to capture that buzz as it's beginning out on the web and bring it into ad units. And as they near this sort of opening day, really, you know, capture that excitement and interest and get it out into the web in a very quick, efficient way, and then after movie opens, to keep it going. Now, obviously, if you have a movie that has really poor feedback, then that strategy is not going to work. But most of the studios know pretty far in advance which are the movies that are really have people excited. And so that's what excites me, is because, you know, when you open the New York Times on Friday or Saturday and see all the reviews posted in there, we like to think that we can take that excitement, enthusiasm, and get it out on the web as it's occurring, and really help studios capture that buzz.
You know, the only problem with the movie business, calling on the movie business, is that everything is so short term. You know, they'll do a 2-week promotion and it's all last minute, and they slash budgets and ad budgets. If you want to get a whiplash business, it's putting too much focus on the studios. So I think, and you can't often get them to commit to like long-term strategic relationships. They just don't have that mentality. They don't even have a 30-day mentality. It's shorter than that. And so that'll drive you crazy. So what's your number two? Because you need like the automotive or a more solid number two that's going to have sustainable programs.
Okay, well, that's good feedback. I'd take some of that short-term movie buzz right now, but...
Absolutely. I think they should be the frosting on your cake. You need to have a really good LA salesperson that lives and breathes and has all those contacts and is a go-to kind of pioneering thinker for them and understands their business deeply. And you can get that cream if you bring the right person in, but it's not going to sustain socialmedia.com to stay there, obviously. So what other one do you want?
Well, the other thing that we have is a unit that incorporates a lot of the different things that we do, the streams from the web and some polling and survey type things, as well as the ability to embed a video in. And what I've been excited about is not specifically for any industry, but the idea to use these units to capture excitement around an event and not just the brand. So using Yelp reviews and ads to help where's the best place to take your father for Father's Day? Using Foursquare or Yelp reviews to help, drive back to school traffic. So it's the idea that an advertiser doesn't have to just drive a conversation about themselves. They can drive a conversation where those conversations are actually happening around holidays, special events, back to school. And we're getting some interesting and exciting traction around that, really using our products to not artificially create a conversation around a brand, but create a conversation that a brand would like to be associated with.
Okay, here's one for you. So events are great, but they're temporal, which means you're constantly chasing your tail. Here's one you could think about. One that comes to mind for me, for you, is consumer electronics. Because people are always buying new cameras, new laptops, all the little millions of, just like open the B&H photo catalog and go after a lot of those companies or Amazon's top, consumer electronics products. Those brands, they need to influence purchase of products that are kind of medium impulse, like $200 to $800, because people want reviews of those kinds of products to make those decisions. But they're quick decisions. There's a lot of volume and those companies can afford to do it. And sentiment is important to them and features and reviews are important to them. That could be a good business for you.
That's a good idea. Maybe I should come on every week just so I can get more business tips from you.
I just like thinking about it. I've been thinking for 15 years about dynamically generated display advertising. It's like a little channel for me of interest. Like, it's like a little groove in my cerebellum. And of course, social is my favorite thing that's ever happened to the internet. So it's a good combination for me. I like to think about. Plus, I've called on a lot of people about a lot of pioneering stuff over the years. So I know where the holes are, where the gopher holes are. So, all right. Here's what I want to talk about now.
Okay.
I was just at a TEDx San Francisco, part of the TED, kind of an outgrowth of the TED conferences. And I got to meet Dr. Paul Watson. He runs SeaShepherd.org.
Right.
And he has something in common with you. I think he has it in common with you. I could be wrong, but I know, he has one thing in common with you. I'm not sure that he's been arrested while working for Greenpeace. He might have been fired by Greenpeace, but I'm sure he's been arrested while working with Greenpeace.
He's been arrested many times. I know, and rammed and sunk and all that kind of stuff.
And you have too. What did you get arrested for when you worked with Greenpeace?
Well, when I worked there for about a year and a half when I was out of college, and one of the things that you do when you I was a fundraiser, a door-to-door fundraiser, but worked on some of the issues. So I was given an opportunity to work on one of the campaigns, which was trying to stop chemical waste dumping into Chesapeake Bay.
Oh, I love the Chesapeake Bay. Soft shell crabs. It's a beautiful riparian area.
Once you get into that point, they say, would you like to work on a campaign? And if it occurs that you get arrested, are you willing to do that? And so we went down to this factory in Chesapeake Bay and blockaded the pipes that were dumping waste into the water, and we got arrested and taken to jail, much to my parents' chagrin. But it all the charges were dropped, as long as I didn't get arrested and Maryland for the next 12 months, which I was able to meet that condition.
But, exactly.
That was a younger time in my life. But, you know, Greenpeace is it's a great organization. It was a really fun experience. And, you know, I respect the people who do all that work.
So do I. I think that's the future of my daughter's life. So I keep an eye on it. So I ask this question sometimes of my upcoming guests, and sometimes people answer it and sometimes they don't. And I liked your answer. I asked in what area you might feel superior to most people. And some people wrestle with the concept of actually admitting that they might feel superior in some area. And I appreciate about you that you didn't. You said, in general, you're more organized and focused than the average person. What is it about you that allows you to be more focused or more organized or both?
You know, I don't really know how it works, but I've always just been capable of keeping a lot of things straight in my head and keeping organized. And, you know, I realized that when I was working at Jupiter, because I'd never really had any true business experience before, and I joined Jupiter and it was 12 people, and we built it up to about 500 people. And what I was just very good at was knowing what needs to be done today, next week, next quarter, you know, next year. And I'm just able to keep a lot of, you know, different data points straight in my head. It drives my family and my fiance crazy because I'm able to stay pretty organized and on top of things when, you know, most people sort of forget what they're trying to get done in any given period of time.
Yeah, so it's the keeping the data points in your head.
I have a conceptual way of doing that.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly how. But.
Well, right. It's just how your brain's wired.
I can tell you how my brain isn't wired too, but that's how it is wired.
Yeah, so that's good. So you know that about yourself, and that it's interesting because I ride the lines on that. I'm like you, able to accomplish a lot, but I have to check in all the time with myself and with my partner, Tim. He's my husband and we work together. And you'll frequently find me saying, okay, now, what do you think our priorities are? What should we be, what do we need to do first, second, third? And are we going to get it done in this time? And, you know, so I don't hold it all, but I know how to compensate for it by asking the questions, making sure we're all on the same page about who's doing what when.
Okay.
But I agree with you that really is a big part of accomplishment is holding that. I also think goal clarification, goal setting is really, really important. I've done a number of shows to help my listeners with really getting clear on their goals. I work with John James Santangelo, and he comes on every 6 months or so, and we talk about that. And I've even had him do guided visualizations for people so they can think through, have a process, a framework, a guided framework for understanding how to prioritize what they do. Because not everybody's wired like you are, Kurt.
Thank goodness.
Well, you found a way to leverage it, which is important. So another question. A lot of your time at Google was very internal. You were an ops guy rolling out big stuff. Now at socialmedia.com, you need to be out in the world more, evangelizing the concepts of this integrated new social display, you know, paradigm. And what is it that we can help you with? You know, you're here on a show with some of the most important people in digital marketing and media. We're listening to you. What would you like? How can we help you get out in the world? What platforms would you like? What exposure? Where do you want to get involved? What would you like to do?
Well, thank you for offering me that. I mean, it's that is very much the difference between my two roles, and I'm really relishing the opportunity to do that. Love the opportunity to speak at, you know, any events or conferences that your listeners are organizing. I think we have a really interesting perspective in terms of how we view the web and what we're trying to do. We also are, you know, trying to get our stories out to agencies and brands to get companies that are interested and even just sort of testing our ideas. We clearly don't proclaim to know, you know, we don't have all the answers, but we think we're on to something, and we think that, you know, brands and agencies should try what we're doing and see if it works for them and see what their experience is. So both those two areas are helpful. I also just like to have, you know, intellectual dialogue. Actually, it doesn't have to even be intellectual, but just a dialogue with people about how they see the space and how they see social advertising evolving over the next period of time, because I really do feel, I feel like it's in its infancy. I know Facebook doesn't view it as sort of a new thing, but I think it is very much work in progress that's really just getting started. So I love talking to people about their perspectives on the industry and where they think it's going.
All right. So if someone wants to reach out to you and invite you to speak, or if a brand or agency wants you or your team to come in, or someone wants to connect with you at a, you know, pretty reasonably high level of possibility around social ads, how would you like them to connect with you?
Email is always the best. I mean, I'm very responsive. It's just Kurt, K-U-R-T, at socialmedia.com.
Good.
It's an easy URL.
You'll get some response.
Oh, that's great. Thanks.
I want to end the show, and I don't know, again, I don't exactly know how your brain is wired, so do your best. I'm going to ask you to do something, and I want you to do your best with this, and it's okay if it's not perfect, but what I'd like you to do, this is an auditory medium, we're on a podcast, but I would like you to tell us in some pictures and as much visual dialogue as you can conjure what it was like hiking the Annapurna Circuit in Nepal, because you've done that very, you know, not that many people have had the opportunity to do that. It's an amazing, beautiful landscape. And I'd like you just to maybe give us a couple of what I call frames, which are visual, auditory, smell, taste, feel, sensation, little snapshots of what that experience was like.
Okay. Well, I mean, the biggest visual I can give of that is you are essentially spending 15 days walking around, circumnavigating what is in reality one mountain, which is they call the Annapurna Massif, I guess. I don't know if I have the French right, but you literally spend 18 days walking behind those mountains, crossing a pass, and then coming around in front of those mountains. And so you may think you're on a hike, but really you're just going in a large circle around one of the largest mountain ranges in the world. And the whole trip, you go from small village to small village. Some are very dusty, some are very lush. You hike through a rhododendron forest, so you see, imagine your front yard with seven or eight rhododendrons on them, and then imagine an entire forest that is nothing but purple and red and magenta rhododendron trees. And you're also just following rivers the whole time, so there's nothing but the sound of rushing water both on the way up and on the way back.
Wow, so beautiful. I know that was one of your kind of travel experiences that changed your life. In what way did having that experience change your life?
I think just actually taking the time to walk for 18 days and just experience a culture and a land on foot. There was an interesting article, I don't know if you saw it, in the New York Times, I think it was in the New York Times a few weeks ago, how essentially all but like the last 20 or 30 miles of that is going to be paved within the next...
I saw that. They're building roads.
Yeah, they're building roads both up both sides. And so this very unique experience where you actually got to walk through the countryside and up over this path, it's essentially going away. You can still walk, but as everyone knows, it's very different to walk along the side of a road than it is to walk on a trail. So
absolutely.
Just having the time and the, you know, actually it was one of the most physically demanding things in parts that I've ever done either. So it was that I really enjoyed about it.
Nice. Have you ever read A Walk in the Woods by Bill Bryson?
I have.
Isn't that good?
That's a great book.
Yeah. I like everything he writes.
I aspire to do something like that, but I'm not sure where the time is going to come in the next period of this period of my life, for sure.
Well, you know, you have to take it as you go. Don't save it for the end. Because you're going to be old and crotchety soon.
I'm already old and crotchety.
No, you aren't. You look great. Okay. And you sound great, and you are great. And it was really fun to have this time with you. Thanks so much for coming on the show and telling us how we can support you in your work at socialmedia.com, because it's good work.
Thank you so much, Susan. It's great to chat.
My pleasure. All right. You got to meet Kurt Abrahamson, the CEO of socialmedia.com. If you can help him out, do it. I'm your host, Susan Bratton. Have a great day, and I hope we'll connect next week.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.